Evening Under Lamplight with Robert Louis Abramson on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Here is a special announcement. Today is Tuesday, and not, as is announced in today's Sunday Telegraph, Friday. And now, a repeat of last Thursday's performance of Monday Night is Music Night.
And here we are, Robert Louis Abrahamson with Evening Under Lamplight on the newly rebranded Cambridge 105 Radio. We'll be taking up some Halloween themes this evening under lamplight, and you are invited to attend. Now, let's try out this other new ID, see what happens. I haven't heard it before.
Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Fine. They didn't mention my name, and that's fine, because the first time they said Abramson, and it's, as we know, Abraham's son. But let's not make a fuss. Now, next, we'll get ourselves ready for the rest of the show with Alec Guinness reading from T.S. Eliot's Four Quartets, Home is Where One Starts From.
Home is where one starts from. As we grow older, the world becomes stranger. The pattern more complicated of dead and living. Not the intense moment isolated with no before and after, but a lifetime burning in every moment, and not the lifetime of one man only, but of old stones that cannot be deciphered. There is a time for the evening under starlight, a time for the evening under lamplight, the evening with the photograph album. Love is most nearly itself when here and now cease to matter. Old men ought to be explorers. Here and there does not matter. We must be still and still moving into another intensity for a further union, a deeper communion through the dark cold and the empty desolation, the wave cry, the wind cry, the vast waters of the petrel and the porpoise. In my end is my beginning.
As we grow older, he says, the world becomes stranger, the pattern more complicated of dead and living. And this evening, under lamplight, we'll be attending to one of those strange and complicated patterns of dead and living, specifically in connection with Halloween, if only as a counter-dose to all the nonsense the popular culture today sprays at us about this season. Well, okay, first let's have a less intense song about Halloween themes with that little classic Monster Mash by Bobby Pickett, or as he parades himself here, Bobby Boris Pickett, by a quick association from Boris to Boris Karloff, to Frankenstein's monster as played by Boris Karloff, to all sorts of strange and supernatural creatures, even though Frankenstein's monster was not a supernatural creature at all, but a quasi-living being created entirely by science itself. Okay, stop all this and let's get on to the song itself. That sound at the very beginning of the track, which sounds to me like a drum roll, apparently it's meant to be the sound of a coffin lid creaking open, a sound made, I read, by pulling a rusty nail out of a board. Oh, and the boiling cauldron was just some studio guy with a straw and a glass of water. And this goes out specially for Dave in Sawston, if he's still awake and with us.
Began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the monster mash.
The monster mash. It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast, the ghouls all came from their humble abode to get a jolt from my electrodes. They did the monster mash. It was a graveyard smash. It caught on in a flash. They did the monster mash. The zombies were having fun. The party had just begun. The guests included Wolfman, Dracula, and his son. The scene was rocking, all were digging the sound. Igor on chains, backed by his bane hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five. They played the monster mash. It was a graveyard smash. It caught on in a flash. They played the monster mash. Out from his coffin, Drax's voice did ring. Seems he was troubled by just one thing. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said, "Whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?"
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash.
The monster mash.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the mash.
It's caught on in a flash.
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash. Now everything's cool, Drax a part of the band. And my monster mash is the hit of the land. For you, the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them boy, it sent you.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
The monster mash.
And you my graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
Mash.
Mash. Easy, Igor. You impetuous young boy.
That's actually a very witty, funny song. I wish we had more time to go into it, but we haven't. So it's on your own shoulders. Attend to it again sometime yourself. But here's something I hadn't known before. When the song came out in 1962, the BBC banned the song because it was too morbid. Perhaps they meant that his accent was too morbid, but the song itself is far too infantile and innocently playful to be called morbid. And did you notice this isn't really a song, but more like a recitative with Bobby Pickett speaking and the instruments and those sweet girls bringing in the early 60s dance rhythm? This was 1962, the time of all sorts of new dances, capitalizing on the popularity of the twist. And you'll recall in the song that Dracula indignantly wonders whatever happened to his Transylvania twist. The monster mash followed D.D. Sharp's mashed potato. You moved your feet as though you were mashing potatoes, you see. And when the monster mash came along, you still mashed with your feet, but you moved your arms with exaggerated jerks as if you yourself were Frankenstein's monster. We in Philadelphia could see teenagers, my friend's older sister among them, doing this on American Bandstand. Okay, let's continue with a pair of Kinks songs appropriate to our theme. Less camp than the Monster Mash, wittier and lit with Ray Davies' kinky compassion. First, we'll have Wicked Annabella from the important 1968 album The Kinks Are the Village Green Preservation Society. Let's run over the lyrics before we let the music pull us into the eerie world of this song. In a dark and misty house where no Christian man has been, Wicked Annabella mixes a brew that no one's ever seen. We're immediately given the stereotype image of a witch in her unwholesome, horrible house, mysterious, outside society, doing goodness knows what, but it seems pretty dangerous. And the details pile up. Relatives have passed her by, too scared to even say hello. She's in perpetual midnight. She shuts out the day and goes about her sinful ways. But the singer of the song has encountered her, of course. Is she really a witch or just another version of Lola, the strong woman who overpowers the puer, the not-quite-grown-up boy afraid of a real woman? I've seen her hair, he says. I've seen her face look towards mine. I felt her eyes burning my soul, twisting my mind. And then from this one boy to all children, a warning against wicked things waiting for them in the dark. Little children who are good should always go to sleep at night, 'cause Wicked Annabella is up in the sky, hoping they will open their eyes. Don't go into the woods tonight, 'cause underneath the sticks and stones are lots of little demons enslaved by Annabelle, waiting just to carry you home. Andy Miller, who has written a really excellent book about the Village Green Preservation Society, calls Wicked Annabella the closest thing the Kinks ever came to the psychedelic genre of the freak out. Guitars growl and shriek, he says. Vocals are menacing, double-tracked and whispered. This is rather a crazy track, said Ray Davies. I just wanted to get one to sound as horrible as I could. I wanted a rude sound, and I got it. And here's a chance for you to get it, too.
Annabella.
That didn't frighten you too much. Wicked Annabella by the Kinks. Andy Miller, whom we've just been hearing talking about this song, notes that the tales of Annabella's wickedness are all second-hand and are being employed to keep children in their beds and out of the wild woods. In this respect, it is a psychedelic nursery rhyme, though too scary and noisy for a lullaby. As the recording draws to its extended close, the tape is doused in echo and reverb, becoming a suitably infernal cauldron of feedback and disembodied laughter. And you may have noticed that it wasn't Ray Davis singing this time, but Dave Davis, with a pretty spooky voice, just barely holding back some kind of nastiness. Little children who are good, the song says, should always go to sleep at night, 'cause wicked Annabella is up in the sky, hoping they will open their eyes. She's a creature of the night, and that leads us to our next Kinks song called Sleepwalker, from the 1977 album called Sleepwalker, actually. And what a fine sleepwalker Ray depicts. He's just like the rest of us. Everybody got problems, buddy. I got mine, he starts off telling us. Yep, that's for sure. We all have problems. How to pay the bills. How to handle that schmuck that's been making everyone miserable at work. How to apologize without making her even angrier at me. How many painkillers to go through today to ease those shooting pains down my right arm. Not to mention the problem we all share of living in these times of absolute political meshugas. So yes, everybody's got problems, and this guy has his. When midnight comes around, I start to lose my mind. When the sun puts out the light, he tells us, I join the creatures of the night. Wait, what does that mean? Is he a prostitute? A burglar? A wolfman? A vampire? Or just an insomniac spending hours in the night watching old movies? The song was written when Ray had moved to New York and was overwhelmed by the vibrant all-night activity in the city. We have all these options. We'll have to let the rest of the song explain which one, if it can. Does the chorus explain it for us? I'm a sleepwalker, he cries out. I'm a night stalker. I'm a street walker. I'm a night hawker. Are you with me? Let's take these one at a time. A sleepwalker, well, we know literally what sleepwalking is. Somnambulism, that non-conscious activity of walking around at night while you're actually still asleep. But then it becomes a metaphor for those who walk around just going through the motions of their life, automatically turning on some music to run a lively beat through their body, or sitting before a screen with some amusing but forgettable drama going on, or eating without paying attention, you know, that sort of person. Physically awake, but for all that it matters, they might as well be asleep as they go through their day. Or a sleepwalker could be one of those living an in-between life, both asleep and awake, or neither asleep nor awake. A sleepwalker in this sense might be someone like Ray Davis, a Londoner living in New York, not in London anymore, but not quite of New York. Or it could be all of us, living in these in-between times, while we still have a bit of nature's abundance around us and haven't yet reached the times when there is no more nature left. We stand here in the middle, between abundance and sterility, neither really abundant anymore nor quite sterile yet. All right, here's some real Halloween horror for us to contemplate. Or this guy is a night stalker, a much more immediately dangerous character, going around hidden by darkness, prowling after us. For what reason? Or is he like that 1990s comic character, Streetwalker, a creature of the night stalking the evil beings, defending us from their assaults? Or maybe like Strider, also a night stalker in his way. Or a street walker, a prostitute, a hooker out at night looking for some schlemiel to hook and use? Or just some lonely person, aimlessly walking the streets at night, alert to the sounds and the silence, or walking the inner streets of the mind or heart? Someone certainly acquainted with the night.
I have been one acquainted with the night. I have walked out in rain and back in rain. I have outwalked the furthest city light. I have looked down the saddest city lane. I have passed by the watchman on his beat and dropped my eyes, unwilling to explain. I have stood still and stopped the sound of feet when far away an interrupted cry came over houses from another street, but not to call me back or say goodbye. And further still, at an unearthly height, one luminary clock against the sky proclaimed the time was neither wrong nor right. I have been one acquainted with the night.
That was Robert Frost interrupting us with a reading of his poem, Acquainted with the Night. And this sleepwalker also calls himself a night hawker. I suppose we're to bring to mind the famous painting Night Hawks by Edward Hopper. That stark image of an all-night diner lit up amid darkened houses with a man and a woman hunched over coffee, quietly talking with the guy behind the counter, and one other solitary figure with his back to us. And, of course, the all-important sign over the window, Phillies, the name of the cigar, not the baseball team. Those figures out of place in a world where everyone else is asleep for some reason, still out and about. Okay, this has been a long diversion. Back to the lyrics. He seems to repeat what he'd said at the beginning. Then it was everybody's got problems. Now it's everybody's got problems that they want to hide. Yes, of course. And apparently these secrets are what the night stalker seems to be after. He now admits he stalks. When midnight comes along, I take a look inside. Why? Artistic curiosity? Probably, rather than voyeurism? Maybe he's looking inside himself. But then Ray builds it up as a kind of threat. Don't go talking in your sleep. I might come in for a peep. Very casual, as one might come in for a cup of coffee or something. I might come in for a peep, oh yeah. Then later, again prowling at night, he warns us, better close your window tight, I might come in for a bite, oh yeah. A bite to eat? Some Danish to go with the coffee? Or has he now revealed himself as a vampire, this creature of the night? But the kink in the song is that he seems actually rather friendly or obliging. I'm always around if you want to meet. You can find me on almost every street. Wait, so can we turn this whole thing around? Is that melodramatic warning voice just a front? Is he really just another lonely night hawk looking for company? I'm always around if you want to come along and spend some time with me, please. You'll always get me on the telephone, he adds. But that's in the days when telephones were connected to the wall. Is he actually just hanging around in his room, desperate for someone to call? Or are we the desperate ones? I'll even come to your home if you're ever alone, he concludes. That sounds threatening. Who wants this weird stranger coming into our house when no one else is there? But, well, maybe we all do. When we're feeling alone, come keep me company, Mr. Streetwalker. And then comes the final chorus, with his four-part identity, sleepwalker, night stalker, streetwalker, and night hawker, sung over and over into the fade-out, a scary threat, bravado, or a lonely cry in the big city. We have to catch the tone and decide from that. Here, it's time we got to the song. The Kinks, Sleepwalker, attend.
Everybody got problems, buddy, I got mine. hold your whittle tight. I might come in for a fight. Oh yeah. When nighttime comes, I start to creep. Prowl around when you're fast asleep. I walk around on my tippy toes, and I get into places that nobody knows. I'm always around if you wanna meet. You can find me on almost every street. You always get me on the telephone. I'll even come to your home if you're ever alone.
And you know, I too am a kind of night stalker. I'll even come to your home if you're ever alone. That's the glory of radio, and I'm a safe visitor. But my words and the music I bring might just come in for a peep and expose those secrets that you want to hide, but expose them only to yourself as you attend to the show and to your own response. And I'm Robert Louis Abrahamson, and this is Evening Under Lamplight, coming to you on Cambridge 105 Radio. And since Neil Henry hasn't had a chance to come in and record a new ident, I've done a little splicing, a comically inadequate job. But here it is.
When the day comes to an end, he invites you to attend Evening Under Lamplight. It's Cambridge 105 Radio.
Thank you. And let's stroll over here, please, for the second half of our show this evening, Under Lamplight. Now, I want to attend to a pair of Scottish ballads, one with a direct Halloween connection and one with an indirect connection. Both are about encounters between human beings and fairies. Fairies may not feature very much in modern Halloween costume fashion, but they did, in traditional lore, make their threatening appearance on Halloween, as we'll see. The first ballad is one of my favourites, Tam Lin. And we have to imagine that the fairies here are fairies in the Tolkien sense rather than in the Tinkerbell sense. These fairies are human-sized, with human passions and attractions, but they exist in a special world not quite our own. More than fairies, though, Tam Lin is about Janet, a feisty, even a spoiled girl. The story opens with someone, warning all maidens who wear gold in your hair, that is, rich girls like Janet, not to go to Carter Hawk because young Tam Lin is there. And he'll take something from you, either your ring or your green mantle or else your maidenhead. Hearing this, Janet is intrigued or defiant or lured, Whatever her motive, she sets off to Carterhaugh. Carterhaugh is actually a real place in Selkirkshire in the Scottish borders. A haugh, H-A-U-G-H, is a meadow on the banks of a river, and Carterhaugh is situated near where Yarrow Water joins Ettrick Water, Sir Walter Scott country, James Hogg country. So Janet runs off to Carterhaugh, and with what aim in mind we don't know, she goes over to a rose bush and pulls a double rose. One is not enough for this girl. This action turns out to be a kind of summons to Tamlin, who suddenly appears and demands to know what she is doing there without his permission. "Your permission," Janet replies. "This is my land. My daddy gave it to me. I'll do what I want here." Not quite in these words, but I wanted to emphasize the idea of the kind of woman Janet is. As in all of these ballads, we see into character through actions and words. It's not clear what happens next. In one version, there's a verse here that tells us he's ta'en her by the milk-white hand and by the grass-green sleeve and laid her down upon a bank and didn't he ask her leave. That sounds like rape, but I'm not so sure. I suspect she takes some of the initiative, judging from what we know of her character and his. If Tamlin had forced himself upon her, it would have been the only initiative he takes in the whole story. She's the one who acts, not he. None of this is explained. There are very few explanations in the Scots ballads, but the next thing we know, she's headed back home where something is wrong. Things are going on as usual back at her father's castle, but Janet appears green as any glass. Her father raises the subject to her meek and mild. He's a little afraid of her temper, perhaps. He says he fears she is with child. "Which of my knights has done this to you?" "If that I gave we child, father," she says, "mysel maun bear the blame. There's ne'er a laird about your hall shall get the baron's name. But if my love were an earthly knight, as he's an elfin grey, I wouldna gie my ain true love for nae lord that ye hae. I wouldn't give my own true love for any lord that you have." In other words, she tells him, it's not really your business, but I can assure you it's none of these knights around here. She tells him that her lover is an elf in grey, perhaps with a sense of pride that she's too special to lie down with just any human man. But brave as she is on the outside, we can tell she's bothered by an important consideration. What would it mean to bear an elfin child? Has she landed herself with something she can't handle? When we next see her, she's returning to Carterhaugh and pulls another double rose. There's a hint that she hopes, by fairy magic, to abort the baby. But Tamlin appears and asks, why has she pulled that double rose, all to kill the bonny babe that we got us between? She doesn't answer, but takes the chance to learn a little about him. She asks him if he'd ever been in a church, a place fairies cannot or will not enter, and he explains that actually he's not a fairy at all. He was an earthly knight, nobly born, who was abducted by the queen of fairies when he fell off his horse. You see, fairies are dangerous. "It's pleasant to live with the fairies," he says, "but there's one big problem. Every 7 years, the fairies have to pay a tax to hell in the form of a human soul. What else is Satan really interested in? And Tamlin is afraid he'll be the offering this year. I am safe fair and full of flesh. I'm feared it be myself. Rescue me," he begs Janet. This very night, it turns out, is Halloween, the traditional night when all the demonic creatures pay their dues to the devil. And tonight, Tamlin advises Janet must lie in ambush at Miles Cross and pull him off his milk-white steed as the procession rides past. But then comes the hard part. As the fairies will fight to get Tamlin back, they will turn him in her arms into a newt or a snake and then into a red-hot bar of iron. But Janet is not to fear. He will do her no harm. Finally, they'll turn him into a burning flame, and then Janet must quickly throw him into the well. This will transform him back into a naked knight, and if she then hides him in her mantle, she will have won him. And then the story jumps immediately to that night. The ballads are always at their best when describing eerie nighttime scenes. Gloomy, gloomy was the night, and eerie was the way, as fair Jenny in her green mantle to Miles Cross she did gay. About the middle of the night she heard the bridles ring. This lady was as glad at that as any earthly thing. And she pulls Tam Lin off his white horse and holds fast, though they turn him into all those frightening shapes, intrepid, resourceful and brave as we knew she was. But the Queen of Fairies has the last word. Furious to have lost such a prize as Tam Lin, she utters her famous frustrated curse. Shame betide her ill-fared face, and an ill death may she die, for she's ta'en awa the bonniest knight in all my company. But had I kenned Tam Lin, she says, what now this night I see, I would have ta'en out thy twa grey een and put in twa een o' tree. If I had known what I have seen this night, I would have taken out your two grey eyes and put in two eyes of tree, that is, of wood. There's a nice Halloween story for you. But the ballads were meant to be sung, and so let's move over to the music. First, I'll give you a bit of Ewan McCall's version, just voice, giving us a taste of the traditional sound of the ballad. And then we'll move, seamlessly I hope, over to the Fairport Convention's sparkling folk rock version from the 1969 album Liege and Leaf. And when I say sparkling, I really mean it. So first, Ewan McCall.
I forbid ye, maidens all, that wear gowd in your hair, to come or gae be carter hoch, for young Tam Lin is there. There's nane that gaes to carter hoch, but pays to him their fee. Either their rings or green mantles, or else their maiden heed. Janet has kilted her green kirtle a little ben her knee, and she has gained to carter hoch as fast as she could hie. She had nae pood a double rose a rose but under brier. When out and started young Tam Lin, says Lady Alpoony mare, why poo ye the rose, lady, and why break ye the wand? And why come ye to Carter Hough withouten my command? Carter Hough is mine, she said, my daddy gied to me, and I will come to Carter Hough without the leaf o' thee. He's ta'en her by the milk-white hound and by the grass-green sleeve, and laid her down upon a bank and did nae ask her leave. Janet has kilted her green kirtle a little ben her knee, and she has gained to her daddy's house as fast as she could hie.
I forbid you maidens all that wear gold in your hair to travel to Carter Hall. They leave him a play. she's gone to her father, as fast as go can she. Well, then spoke her father dear, and she spoke meek and mild. Oh, and alas, Janet, he said, I think you go with child. Well, if that be so, Janet said, myself shall bear the blame. There's not a knight in all your hall shall get the baby's name. For if my love were an earthly knight, as he is an elfin grey, I'd not change my own true love for any knight you have.
This night I did see, I'd have looked him in the eye.
Well, that was the Fairport Convention with Tamlin, featuring, of course, the voice of Sandy Denny. Translated from Scots into English with the loss of some of the rhymes, but we're not going to fuss. The music was just so wonderful. Now, here's another Scottish ballad about a human being being taken by the fairies. It's Thomas the Rhymer, or True Thomas. It's set in the same region of the Borders as Tamlin, in Ercildoune, or as it's known these days, Earlston. Thomas of Ercildoune was a real person living in the Borders in the 13th century, noted, whether in fact or just in legend, as a prophet, giving his prophecies in verse form, hence being the Rhymer. He was True Thomas because, so it was held, his prophecies all came true. The ballad explains how he got the gift of a tongue that would never lie. The story begins with True Thomas lying on Huntley Bank, where a fairly he spied wi' his ee, a wonder he spied with his eye. He saw a beautiful lady riding up to him by the Eildon Hills. She wore a shirt of grass-green silk, and a velvet mantle, and on each tassel of the horse's mane hung, so we're told, 50 siller bells and 9. So the air was filled with the delicate sound of silver bells at each step of the horse. A courteous, even a reverend man, was Thomas, and he got up, took off his cap, and kneeled down, hailing her as the Queen of Heaven, for thy peer on earth I ne'er did see. "Oh, no, Thomas," she replied, "that name does not belong to me. I'm but the Queen of Fair Elfland that am hither come to visit thee." She seems to want his poetic talents to keep her company. "Harp and carp, Thomas," she says, that is, "play your harp and come have beautiful conversation with me. Harp and carp alang wi' me, and if ye dare to kiss my lips, sure of your body I will be." "I'm not afraid of that," he replies, and he has kissed her rosy lips all underneath the Eildon tree. "Okay," she says, "now you must come with me and serve me 7 years." She mounts her milk-white steed, and Thomas gets up behind her. The silver bells ring, and the horse takes off faster than the wind. Oh, they rade on and farther on, till the steed gaed swifter than the wind, until they reached a desert wide, and living land was left behind. "Let's get down and rest a minute, Thomas," she says. "Put your head on my knee, and I'll show you 3 wonders." She points out 3 different paths ahead of them. The narrow path, so thick beset with thorns and briars, is the path of righteousness, though after it but few inquires. And over there is a broad, broad road, the path of wickedness, though some call it the road to heaven. And see ye not that bonny road that winds about the ferny brae? That is the road to Fair Elfland, where thou and I this night maun gae. That's where we're headed, Thomas. But she warns him he must hold his tongue, because if he says anything, he'll be stuck in Elfland forever. And then we get another of those eerie night scenes. Oh, they rade on and farther on, and they waded through rivers aboon the knee, and then they saw neither sun nor moon, but they heard the roaring of the sea. It was mirk, mirk night, and there was nae stern light, and they waded through red blood to the knee, for all the blood that shed on earth runs through the springs o' that country. Finally they come to a green garden, and the Queen of Fairies pulls an apple from a tree. Oh, we know the mythic symbolism of that. "Take this for thy wages," she tells him. "It will give thee the tongue that can never lie." But no, in good ornery Scottish style, Thomas will not lower himself to take such a gift. "My tongue is my own," he cries, "and I'm not afraid to say whatever I want, and I'm not afraid to speak to prince or lord, or to take any favours from fair ladies." "Now hold thy peace," the lady said, "for as I say, so must it be." He has gotten a coat of the elven cloth, and a pair of shoes of the velvet green, until 7 years were gain and past True Thomas on Earth was never seen. One version of the story says that at the end of the 7 years, when the fairies had to pay their tax to hell on Halloween, this queen of fairies, unlike the queen in Tamlin, so truly cared for this human that she sent him back home rather than let him be given to Satan. Now, as before, we'll hear Ewan McCall and then move on to folk rock, not the Fabport Convention this time, but Matty Pryor and Steel Eye Span. And with that, we'll close our evening under lamplight. I'm Robert Louis Abrahamson, and this is Cambridge 105 Radio. And here's Thomas the Rhymer.
True Thomas lay on Huntley Bank. A fairly he spied wi' his ee, and there he saw a lady bright come riding doon by Eildon Tree.